So I noticed that you're trying to learn how to crip walk.
I was gonna
for
show
beginners.
Eaton. I was gonna show Eaton how to crip walk.
I'm a beginner.
Yeah, yeah. So but we can watch that. I was gonna send that, and then also I've been working.
Wait, are all of the things in the background there Yankee Doodle Panther?
Yes. So look, you found both of my things. All right, well, here, fuck it. I'll just bring my mic over here. So
this is great. So many times I come over here and it's like Christmas. Somebody sends me a gift or Justin puts a bunch of
stylized pictures Yankee
of me on his
Doodle
desktop.
Panther.
That's so good.
That one. But I wasn't able to have it. This one looks too modern for me. I wanted it to look like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon from like the 80s.
Did you guys ever watch DuckTales?
Yes.
That looks like the bad guy's capitalist
it does,
brother.
It does.
Like the Shere Khan's evil brother.
But it didn't look old enough for me. And so this was the one that I liked the most. This one looks...
That one's good.
He looks kind of more like a dog, and he looks like he would be in J. Edgar Hoover's FBI.
It looks like Scooby-Dooby Hoover.
Yes, that's it. And then it looked like the closest I could get to a horse in the background. So... there we go. The nice. Yankee Doodle Panther. I've been looking up tutorials for you to crip walk. And actually, we should go over this. Here, pick your favorite of these. These were gifts that came in from... Yeah, I've seen all these. That came in into the P.O. box.
Oh, shit.
They are DEA challenge coins.
Whoa.
What
so
does
these
that
are
mean?
So if we ever do cocaine, we sniff it off these.
Well, I do have intelligence unit.
Yeah, so these are three different challenge. Are you familiar with the concept of challenge coins?
No.
So it's mostly like a military or police kind of thing, but the idea is that everybody who's in like this group has their challenge coin. And if anybody at the bar, if somebody starts knocking theirs on the bar, everybody's got to knock theirs on the bar. And the person who doesn't have theirs on them, then they got to pay for the round of drinks. But they've become collectible ephemera, especially for folks who are outside of those organizations. And so the DEA has one for the Cannabis Eradication and Suppression Program. You have the Cocaine Intelligence Unit, which many people will know as the logo of the Chapo's Trap House podcast. That is their logo.
I was going to say, I've seen this before.
Yeah. And then
mine is yours? Dangerous Drugs Intelligence Unit, and it's a skeleton wearing a tuxedo and a top hat with a bunch of crazy lines behind him, which kind of makes acid look cool.
No, all of these. Mine is a dragon with a marijuana leaf that is smoking, is using his fire breath to smoke weed. And how would you describe your cocaine intelligence unit?
Mine's like the ghost face from Scream, and he's got an hourglass that's being... There's like a razor that's putting snow into the hourglass, which is obviously coke. Yeah, this is fantastic.
These are super cool. Did the listener send this to us?
They did, yes. And I don't know if
Does this mean that I have to say nice things about the DEA now?
No, I don't. I don't know where they came from. And the package that showed up did not have a name on it. So we are just going to thank our listener.
Thank you, anonymous DEA member or person that seduced DEA members. Either way, very kind gift.
So, I mean,
it says we're special agents on the back.
I'll give you your choice. Jen, do you want marijuana, cocaine, or psychedelics?
Can I see the weed one?
Yeah, see the weed one. Eaton, have you settled?
I feel pretty good about my
you
psychedelic
feel pretty good about
one,
the psychedelic.
Yeah.
I will take whichever
really
one you
like
don't want.
I the coke one.
All right, then I will keep the weed one.
They're both great, but like this was just the
they're
luck
all
of
amazing,
the draw.
And these are really good challenge. Like, there's a lot of challenge tokens that are a little bit more plain than this, but this is like full color and the articulation is amazing. I guess
so. They're not pogs.
They could be slammers.
Okay,
I mean,
all right.
So
they're dual function.
I don't know if it's
a
regulation.
Heavy pog.
I don't know if it's regulation for a tournament or anything like that.
But I see two scenarios that will probably happen within the next week or two. I'll be at one of those DEA pubs, and somebody will pull
which
out a
you
challenge
are off
coin
to find yourself yeah, at,
and I'll be like, "No, friend, I have one of these too." And then he'll be like, "You seem super cool. Want to play pogs?" And I'll go, "Yes." And then we'll do that. And then we'll do mushrooms in the bathroom, according to...
I was going
to
say, it sounds like something that you would dream up while high on psychedelics. Texas. I'm Justin Robert Young.
I'm Jennifer Briney.
I'm Andrew Heaton.
And we're not wrong on this edition of the program. We will talk about something that may or may not be happening while you are listening to this podcast, the 45th president of the United States being arrested in Manhattan. And then we're going to do it, y'all. We're going to do it. We're just going to turn over 20 minutes of this show to Andrew Heaton so we can talk about zoning, because Jen found a local angle about Airbnbs and short-term rentals that I knew from the second that I read the article that Jen posted in our group chat. We basically get the day off, Jen.
It's pretty perfect, especially where it's like Andrew gets to talk about zoning and how I'm the problem. In this particular
article. Oh, yeah, because you are a habitual short-term rental person.
Yeah, I'm the baddie.
So I think all that would be plus fun. Your emails. But let's begin with Chungus. Former President Donald Trump said Saturday he expects to be arrested in connection with the years-long investigation into a hush money scheme involving adult film actress Stormy Daniels, and called on his supporters to protest any such move. In a social media post, Trump, referring to himself, said, quote, "The leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States will be arrested on Tuesday of next week." He did not say why he expected to be arrested. His team said after Trump's post that it had not received any notifications from prosecutors, although they did go on to say that they were responding to media leaks and speculation.
Well, there was the Fox News thing that I posted on my Instagram. So, like, before Trump went and said all this, Fox News was reporting that the Secret Service was working with the DA to prepare for protests, and then Trump came out. So I think because Fox said it.
Yeah, there was also another New York Times article that came out this morning that I assume was not all reported on within the last 24 hours that was talking about various different stuff. So I have journalism speculation on how this would have happened. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy sought to tamp down former President Trump's calls for protests in response to a possible arrest of the president, saying, quote, "I don't think people should protest this stuff." I think this boils down to three questions here. I'll read them all and then we can go one by one. Do you believe that Trump will be indicted and arrested by Friday of this week? Do you believe that this will help or hurt him in his chase for the presidency again? And finally, do you believe that in his truths, that is the post on his social media network, that he called for violence? Let's start with, do you believe that Trump will be indicted or arrested? Jen Briney.
I don't know the timing of it, but I 100% believe he's going to be indicted. He'll be indicted. The arrested thing is interesting because if he surrenders, then there's no formal arrest. So I don't really know if he'll be like formally arrested. But yes, I do think that he will be indicted. The question for me is how many times? Because when I told my husband that this was happening, he goes, oh, what charge is he getting arrested for? And then just like rattled off four different investigations. I forgot about one of them. So he was like, which one is this? And I was like, oh, this is the Stormy Daniels one. Oh, okay. Not the stealing of the election or the Trump organization or, you know, there was a, what was the fourth one? I keep forgetting the fourth one.
Oh, I don't know.
I think the list is kind of elastic depending on who you're talking to.
Well, no, there are two that are, you know, The Manhattan DA that is allegedly going to have this, and this will be happening probably tomorrow, Tuesday, as you are listening to this. And then there's the Georgia, did he subvert the election, where you had that one super weird jury foreman lady that went on television and like said without saying that they had, you know, recommended on the grand jury to indict him.
Yeah, and the feds are also investigating that one. Then there's also, did the Trump organization cheat on their taxes? And there is another one.
Although that one, at least the rumors had been that had been dropped within the New York's district attorney.
Yeah.
The taxes one.
I'm so glad the Stormy Daniels thing is coming back. Like, if he does go to prison, I would love for it to be porn star hush money that does it. That's such a wonderful, wonderful episode of the sitcom of our nation. And like, because it's been a while, but as I recall, the issue was that he banged the porn star, Stormy Daniels. She got hush money, but they paid it through the campaign, thus violating federal campaign law.
So yeah, let's refresh everybody's memories on this. No. Let's refresh everybody's memories on the Stormy Daniels thing.
Stormy Horseface McDaniels now.
All right. Stephanie Clifford
is
her
name.
Is
that what he's saying about her?
That's what he's calling
her
now.
After they had carnal relations?
They made
sweet, sweet love.
I never say anything bad about Katie Couric.
So, Trump and Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels, allegedly had sex at a golf resort in Lake Tahoe. This was consensual sex, so the money was not for sex, which some people get mixed up because she is a sex worker by trade, a famous sex worker by trade.
And then there was the other chick, too, and I can't remember her name, but there
Catherine
was a
McDougal.
Second. There you go.
Two different situations, though. One of them, Catherine McDougal, said she wanted to talk publicly about it, and it was
National Enquirer
that did a controlled capture, kill, whatever they called it, where basically the National Enquirer bought the rights to the story and then just didn't do anything about it. The Stormy Daniels thing, according to Michael Cohen, who was Trump's former lawyer that has since cooperated with not only authorities, but also the Democratic Party to embarrass Trump, especially during his presidency.
He also served time for that.
Because he cooperated with authorities.
Yeah.
Yes. So Michael Cohen says that he paid Stormy Daniels to not talk about anything and had her sign an NDA. And then Trump reimbursed Michael Cohen, but it was using campaign funds. And so that is, if you believe Michael Cohen, and if you believe in a court of law that Michael Cohen's testimony will stand up, that is where you get Trump.
I thought there was something also about that other chick where the National Enquirer, it was some kind of like illegal gift by paying that much money. I think that's in there
somewhere. Both of these would fall afoul of Federal Election Commission guidelines.
Yeah.
So whether or not that is something that you go to jail for, whether or not that is a fine, that would, I mean, these things are never actually prosecuted ever. But you know, we would see in whatever process. So that's a situation as I understand it. I did not expect it to go this far. It is pretty clear that it is a priority for the Manhattan District Attorney to make this happen. So I will ask you, Andrew Heaton, do you believe he will be indicted and arrested this week by Friday?
I don't think he'll be indicted and arrested this week, for sure. Here's why I think this. I read his official statement. May I read it to you?
Please.
This is his official statement. And I want you to be asking yourself, is this the statement of a man worried about going to prison imminently? All caps. Now illegal leaks from a corrupt and highly political Manhattan District Attorney's office, which has allowed new records to be set in violent crime and whose leader is funded by George Soros, indicate that, with no crime being able to be proven and based on an old, fully debunked by numerous other prosecutors fairy tale, the far and away leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States of America will be arrested on Tuesday of next week. Protest, take our nation back. I don't think you're going to jail, you're bringing up George Soros. This is campaign
fodder.
Wait,
really?
I don't think so, no. What I'm reading here is a please come to my campaign rally statement.
Having a campaign rally.
He's having a big spontaneous one. Like when I worked in cable television and the election was happening, whenever the ratings on Trump, the polling dropped on Trump went down, he would just say crazy shit. And then everybody would start talking about him and he'd get millions of dollars in earned media. This is the Trump playbook. So I think mainly just reading this, I don't take it seriously. But the other reason I say this is that according to his own legal team, he's basing this off of the news and not any subpoena that he's received from the district attorney. No one in the actual prosecuting unit has said we are going to arrest you next week. That hasn't come up yet. It's all supposition on his part coming from Fox News and other outlets, which again tells me that this is a media phenomenon more than it is an actual legal phenomenon that could happen in the next day or two.
But there's a DA involved, and that statement by Trump reads to me more like a man who thinks he's above the law, because so far he has been.
Oh, for the, I definitely think he thinks he's above the law. I don't dispute it. None of this is to defend Donald Trump, by the way. I'm just saying that I don't think
we
he's
going
to be arrested
this week.
We were
all very, very convinced that you were defending Donald Trump.
We know how much you know.
Hands up, listeners, if you believed he was defending Donald Trump, including those driving.
I don't think he's going to be arrested. This week, I don't know the details of all of this, so I'm shooting from the hip here, but I would kind of be surprised if he got indicted.
There is fairly across the board reporting on communication between the Manhattan DA, Secret Service, and local police, as well as court security, on organizing a process for which a surrender and arraignment would happen.
Thinking that maybe this jackass would tell his morons to protest and cause trouble. And, oh, look at that. He did exactly what they thought he would
do.
Well,
I mean, I think that is, to me, what is straight out of the Trump playbook is nobody's ever going to break a story about me that I will not break and craft the narrative for myself.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, beyond politics, that is his MO from business, from media, like, That is his thing. He does not want to cede the narrative on literally anything. So I do expect it to happen. I mean, barricades and stuff were going up in front of the courthouse today. So I do think that there is. Now, the DA did come out and say, well, look, we haven't even had the grand jury vote. We still actually have to interview one more person. Who knows whether or not that's fully accurate or close to accurate or a rumor that they'll deny ever than anyone ever said later, but I do think that this will happen this week, if not while people are listening to it.
You think he's going to be indicted and arrested and be in the clink?
I don't think, no.
I don't think he's going to go to
jail.
He might get fingerprinted and be out in half an hour.
Yes,
okay.
That would happen.
Mm, okay.
I mean,
there has to be a trial before
I don't think he's a flight risk. Yeah. I don't think a judge.
Well, you're certainly right that he does have to be prosecuted and go through a trial before he could be given a prison sentence. But flight risk, though, I could totally see him, like, getting in a jet and going to Barbados and declaring himself the real president or something. Like, I could totally see Trump doing that.
I don't know.
He's such an eternal victim. He's going to play this up like, oh, this. He already did it in that fucking tweet of his where he's saying that.
Please,
the,
come on. Keep the branding right.
Oh, yeah. The fake Twitter that he invented.
60,000 likes. I mean, like, even stuff like that. It's like that would be something that would have the viewership of the Super Bowl if it were on Twitter. But, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
he's allowed to be there and he's still not doing it, which I find kind of fascinating.
Yeah. He's still, you know, still surprising us after all these years, old Donald John.
He's a stubborn old goat.
I think
give him
this does lead into what I assume is your next question, Justin, which is this going to benefit him?
Will this help or hurt him in either the primary or the general? Take it however you want.
I think it'll help him in the primary. I'm no fan of Trump, but he is a genius in terms of media manipulation. He's very smart at it. If he's doing this, he's doing it for a reason. It's very easy to end up marching to his drumbeat. And it's very, very easy for Trump to lead people around by the nose. He did that for 4 years where the second anything actually got on the radar that bothered him, he would say something crazy or potentially racist or something and just get the whole media apparatus to completely look a different direction. He's very, very good at that. So I don't think this is random. I don't think that this is just he's being petulant. He knows what he's up to. And I think what it's going to do is galvanize his base that already believes that he lost the election because it was rigged against him. And they are now going to interpret this as a political witch hunt for Donald Trump. It's only going to further exacerbate that victimhood narrative that Jen rightly pointed to. And it's going to help make him the righteous martyr who is being accosted by the swamp.
Jen?
I agree with that, with the people that still believe his bullshit about the election. Did you guys see the, he did a video right after this where he said, like, your favorite president is being attacked by the DA and we won the election twice. We're going to have to do it again. Like, he's still going with this whole, I won the election line.
Yes.
Which for the Republicans in my life, like, that is it.
You obviously aren't on Truth a lot because it's been like a daily occurrence on Truth for him. It's like all he talks about.
Yeah. And
although now
pathetic.
He talks about how much Ron DeSantis is a pedophile. he throws that in every once
he's
in a while.
Such
though.
A child.
I sure hope you're right. I sure hope you're right, Jen. I would love it if the Republican Party proved itself to be sane this go round and to leave him behind and move on. That would be thrilling.
No,
I hope
that's
you're correct.
Not what I said. I think you're right that with those people, this could help him. But I'm waiting to see what happens in Georgia and with the feds. Because I think out of all the indictments, when I heard he was going to be indicted, I was like, is this Georgia? Because that's the one I think really matters. That's the one that the sane Republicans are like, you know, this guy tried to stay president. He's still pretending he's president. I think the dumb people are going to be with him no matter what. But sane Republicans care about the Constitution and the country more than they care about this man. And so when it comes to this particular indictment, I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference either way, because if you're still with Trump at this point, you're with him no matter what. The Georgia one, I think, is far more interesting.
Than the Georgia one, if it happens.
But do you think that would affect his base, being indicted for the Georgia one?
Maybe, because I could see some Republicans being kind of on the fence.
We're talking about MAGA
about
Republicans. We're
not
talking
MAGA. I'm talking about people that would vote in the general.
That are Trump curious or Trump plausible.
Or even Trump
leaners.
Voters. I mean, I have Republicans in my life that voted for him twice but said never again after January 6th.
But they wouldn't be in play with either of these, right?
Not
if they've
necessarily,
decided,
because
if they've
here
decided
you go,
no.
You go 4 years later hearing that Biden is the devil and he's bringing us through World War III. And like, there are some real problems with Biden. He's, you know, barely alive is something people seem to think is the case. I mean, there are reasons why Republicans, especially with the passage of time, would maybe be considering dipping their toe back in. And if they were to see that the state of Georgia and the Fed said like, no, this was a crime, like a prosecutable crime, I think that could bring those Republicans back to like, yeah, this happened.
I'm more on Jen's side than I am on Heaton's side, but not necessarily even because I think that they would have, that they would believe that there was merit on in either of these cases. I think that, you know, I don't personally think that this Stormy Daniels thing, considering it relies on the testimony of Michael Cohen, who has swapped sides twice at this point, is going to be something that is worthwhile to bring. I don't think that it's a likely conviction. And if you're going to have the burden of, we're going to haul a former president and a current candidate in, you should be really, 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 really sure that you can convict him.
And add to that, like, who actually gives a flying fuck about campaign finance?
Right.
See, nobody!
So when we talk about Georgia, we're talking about Raffenberger, and we're talking about, like, him saying, go find the ballots. Is that what?
Yeah, we now know of three phone calls, the one that we heard taped, and then there were actually two others. Georgia's doing a real investigation.
Far more likely to actually have gravitas with anybody. I'm with you, Justin, in that.
Well, can I finish my point? My point is, even if you say, look, he said go find the ballots, assuming that he believes that there was actual fraud. You have to prove that he didn't think that there was fraud and he was lying. I think everything in his actions since then, I think to the detriment of his political career, has proven that he does genuinely believe he was robbed.
I think the January 6th
committee
had evidence against that.
Okay. Let's say that voters believe that, both these things that I said. Let's say that they believe that he is being rung up on false charges. I still think that this hurts him because it's just another fucking thing. He is just full of things. And there was a time where the things were the things that you were talking about on Fox News. Hooray, look, finally somebody did the thing. But we are late into the era of things. And right now, across the aisle, there is somebody, a candidate, who is his entire brand is great, same great taste, now less filling in Ron DeSantis. A guy who will do all the things, in fact, maybe more, that Trump said he was going to do and didn't do a lot of it when he was in the presidency, but also is a happily married man with two adorable children and not somebody who will be an endless fountain of things. Now, Trump is trying to bring DeSantis into the world of thing creation by saying that he's a pedophile who slept with his students when he was a teacher. But we'll see whether or not that holds. But I do believe that this, no matter what, hurts him. Regardless, if we're just going to a theory of mine, put ourselves into a voter for whom doesn't believe any of these charges are real, I still think that it's seductive to look across the aisle and say like, yeah, but 5 more years of things, 5 more years.
You're positing that we've finally finally, at last, finally reached Trump exhaustion? We've finally reached our saturation point?
I think the existence of the DeSantis candidacy is proof of that. Because if there was not Trump exhaustion, then we would not see, why would Ron DeSantis even be a thing? Like, they would just say, hey, you're a good governor. We like you. I hope you're vice president. And then they would move on. But some people are just tired of it. And I think that's the entire theory of Ron DeSantis's run. This is just another thing that puts it forward.
All right.
You would be super fun, though. If he does go to jail because of the Stormy Daniels thing and he runs from prison, that'd be fun.
Like Jim Trafficant?
Like Jim Trafficant? Yep, exactly. Like where he's running, like, I can't remember what country it is. It might be Malaysia, where their president, no, it wasn't the whole country, like the mayor was in prison and like ran the city from the prison.
From prison.
Yeah. And I think that a Jim Trafficant style, Trump is in the clink because he paid hush money to a stripper, porn star. While he's now, it'd be fun. It'd be a fun episode of the sitcom.
It would also be really fun to see him have to wear an orange jumpsuit. Just all orange.
Just all orange everything.
Yeah.
Although, no, he wouldn't be orange, though, if he were in prison, because he wouldn't be getting, unless they have a spray tanner in prison.
That's true.
Right? Can he get bronzer in a birthday cake or something? Like they would, like an old school send
a
file?
So, like, you could get the kind that... What's it? The self tanner.
Is that allowed though?
The box hair. Oh yeah. I mean, I'm getting all my information from Orange is the New Black, but they had a hair salon and they were allowed to have like lotions and shit. It's not a weapon.
Yeah.
So he could trade like cigarettes for self tanner.
And he doesn't smoke, so we'd have a lot of those.
Yeah, he could find a way.
One last DeSantis thing. The MAGA world called vociferously for Ron DeSantis to issue a defense of Donald Trump over the weekend. DeSantis did at a press conference on Monday say that the Soros-appointed district attorney is a Travis. I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not exact, but that the Soros-appointed DA has allowed crime in Manhattan to spike to unbelievable levels. He is derelict in his duties, but also, and this is a direct quote, he doesn't know the whole situation with paying hush money to a porn star, end quote.
Yeah.
So he, you know, tried to go with the popular position, which is that liberal district attorneys are ruining great American cities. And this is an example of political overreach while also giving no quarter to MAGA world, which that was where Trump responded by saying that maybe one day Ron will understand being attacked and smeared, you know, and then put up this viral picture of him as a young teacher allegedly drinking with his students and insinuated that maybe he slept with one of those or a young boy.
Mm-hmm. He's awful.
So there we go.
If you remember the 2016 election, there was some serious mudslinging that happened. Remember?
Yeah.
When like Ted Cruz, he was saying Ted Cruz's dad shot JFK.
Yep.
And that Ted Cruz was having an affair with multiple women, one of whom I know. And
Lion Ted,
like no woman voluntarily goes into a room with Ted Cruz. That's not true. He's not having an affair with 15 women. That's nonsense. I'm more apt to believe that his dad shot JFK than 15 women are having an affair with Ted Cruz. And but it was that all over the. It was not one of those. He's a jerk. I don't like him. I'm just full on untethered. The truth need not.
He also shredded Ben Carson's autobiography, which was actually really funny. Have you ever read or heard of Ben Carson's autobiography?
Oh, this is the Mighty Hands or whatever it was. If these hands could talk, I can't remember what it is. Something about hands. He's a surgeon.
But there's one. So there's a famous clip and you can look it up. But
I thought he was the pizza guy.
No, that's Herman Cain.
Yes.
Herman Cain was a delight. Herman Cain was a delight.
No, he was the COVID loss.
Ben Carson is a neurosurgeon. Yeah.
Although
that became,
maybe that's a little racist.
Ben Carson became.
I know. I did confuse the black with.
You did confuse the black guy.
Sorry.
But so did the government because Trump made him Secretary of Urban Development because
yes.
He's black. Like, what does a neurosurgeon have to do with that? Why would a neurosurgeon have?
This is Ben
to do?
Carson, not
yeah, Ben Carson,
not Herman Cain.
Who
Herman yes. Cain? Herman Cain was 999.
999. Yeah.
Herman Cain just trotted off and became a radio personality. But Ben Carson yes. joined the cabinet as the like HUD, Housing and Urban Development, because yes. because he was black. Like it was from like it was. It didn't make any sense. But so
but on the trail, he made fun of the fact that Ben Carson, in his autobiography that was eventually a movie starring QB Gooding Jr., Ben Carson was on the wrong road in life and tried to stab his best friend with a knife, but he hit his friend's belt buckle and the knife fell apart. And that was his sign from God that he needed to get his life together.
Wow.
But Trump acted it out on stage. It was actually,
I don't believe if you've watched
that was
any,
back. That was back when the things were funny and cute.
If you watch any
yeah,
Ben Carson footage.
Yeah, it was funny in 2016 because we didn't think he had a chance.
Yeah. I also, Ben Carson talks the way I would if I drank NyQuil every single day right before going on. I can't fathom him ever stabbing anybody.
I will say, so I made a card game with my friend John Teasdale and our friends at Guts and Glory called The Contender. And during that primary in Iowa, we went to Des Moines and we handed games to free versions of the game to all of the campaign headquarters, because that was like partly our promotion. But we're like, hey, look, you got a bunch of volunteers. If you have downtime, here's a game to play. It's a political card game thing. Some of the people were really nice. The Huckabee team, really nice. The Bernie team was like a college party where the most popular person there was the professor. The Clinton team, extremely paranoid. You would have thought that we were handing them a brick of cocaine and saying, your order's here. They had to like call up and somebody called, like they put me on the phone with somebody on a car phone. They're like, you're what? What? And it's like, well, I'm just trying to give your fucking volunteers a free game. The nicest by far was the Ben Carson office. Mm. They were just the, like this Sunday school genteel. And this guy who's working the front desk was like, you guys made this? Wow. You're famous. Can I get a picture with you? And I was like, yes, sure. By far the nicest people on the planet. The Ben Carson 2016 so Iowa campaign office in Des Moines.
Bang the Bernie Sanders campaign, but yes. Mary the Ben Carson.
Oh, Mary,
campaign.
Yes, yes. And I
and
would kill
Hillary.
Kill the Hillary, although they might kill themselves in self-defense, like because they're too paranoid about the entire operation. All right, last question here. Do you believe that Trump called for violence by saying, protest, 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 take your country back? Jen.
Yes, clearly. It's the same as that stuff he said before the rally on January 6th. He would love to have a bunch of people physically showing support for him in front of the DA's office. I think there's no doubt about that. But really quick, can I just go back for a sec?
Sure.
One thing that I saw today that does have me concerned, because like we're talking about Ron DeSantis and him coming out and supporting Trump, and you know, there's been other Republicans that have done the same thing. It's one thing to have these public pronunciations of like, yeah, we support him. But Jim Jordan and Comer, who's the new chair of the Oversight Committee, they actually sent a letter that says there's either a subpoena coming or they're sending a subpoena as well to the DA.
To the DA, Alvin Bragg, yeah.
And this is where I'm finding the Republican Party to once again very problematic in their support of Trump, where it's like, I get that you might not like the prosecution, but it is not Congress's job or proper role to go and try and subpoena a prosecutor for doing their job in looking into someone who, I mean, even if it's campaign finance and we don't give a shit, it's still a crime. So just the precedent that's being set there, that's something that I'm actually, when in this whole story, that's what I'm going to be paying the closest attention to, is what these Republicans plan to do. Because like, we cannot have these politically motivated people in Congress harassing our prosecutors, trying to get them to not prosecute crimes. It's just not okay.
We can't have a politically motivated investigation into a politically motivated prosecution.
I mean, the thing is, though, Michael Cohen's already served time. This case has been going on for 7 years. It was obviously going towards Trump. So to, like, this isn't new. This isn't something that came out of nowhere. The prosecutor's office in New York has been working on this for a very long time. So they can
that
label
doesn't
it.
Doesn't mean that they have to bring it anywhere. Like DA's offices work on stuff all the time that get dropped.
But they are, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's a politically motivated prosecution just because it's against someone who has run for office and has won before.
Do you believe that this is politically motivated by the DA?
I don't know. I don't know enough about the DA, but I do think that we really, really, really need to lean into the idea that we have one justice system and one law for everybody. And that goes from...
And I think you would get universal support on that statement from both sides.
Mm-hmm, good.
Yeah.
Mean very different things when you said it, when both sides but I think both sides would agree that there is a two-tier justice system.
Where the politics comes in, I think, is less to do with who's being prosecuted and more to do with omissions of prosecution.
Yeah.
That's the issue there, is that maybe I'm turning a blind eye on this person. Well, their heart's in the right place and everybody's a little bit dirty. On the edges. That's the issue here, right? So the way to respond to this is not to lay off Trump. It's to go harder on everybody, including Biden and Hillary and everybody else.
I agree with that completely.
I do think it's politically motivated. Heaton, do you believe that he called for violence?
No, I don't think so. I think he wants to get a ton of media attention. That's what I think he's trying to do. I think he doesn't have a problem with violence, because violence is probably going to get more media attention. That's going to get more cameras. In terms of...
Wait. So if he's trying to get more media attention and he's calling people to physically come, like, what exactly do you think he's asking them to do, if not...
Well, what he said was protest, 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 take back your country.
Take back your country. That's the...
Well, but see, okay, this is where I'm going to put on my prosecutor brain for a minute. Because I don't know the innards of his mind, thank God, and I have no ability to see what's in his horrible little heart. I don't know what his actual intention is.
Non-clairvoyant Heaton.
Non-clairvoyant Heaton doesn't know, right? If Black Lives Matter or somebody else said, protest, 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 take your country back, I wouldn't go, well, they're going to be violent, therefore they can't do it. I don't think this crosses the threshold of inciting violence from a legal perspective. If he was saying, go out and beat up cops or storm the jail or something like that, then absolutely yes. I'm not saying he's a great guy. I'm not saying that he hopes it'll all be perfectly civil. I think he probably wants it to get violent for media attention. But in terms of his root goal, I think it's probably media attention. And in terms of the application of that standard, is he calling for violence? I think it falls short of it.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think we have to be careful with what we assign to language. And regardless of what you think about Trump, same with your BLM example, I would say it's problematic if you look at somebody else saying protest, 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 take your country back, but it's for a cause that you find more palatable. And you say, well, obviously they were just saying protest, even if what happens afterward is there's, 10% of that decides to smash windows and burn buildings. I don't think that it is on the person who called for a protest that 10% of those people did that. I've been in enough protests to know that it's not the heart of the 90% that are there or the sentiment of why the event happened in the first place.
You guys are probably right. I'm just holding his very recent past against him, and having come off of, watching all that footage of the riots that the January 6th committee presented, he sat there and watched TV, did nothing to stop it. He liked it. So I am holding that against him, where it's like, this is similar language. This is a similar situation. He knows what happened that time, and he's still being loose with his words. So it's like, that's where I'm just kind of, I don't trust this man as far as I can throw him. And
we're of one mind on that. I don't trust him at all, nor do I think he has any care for the law that we're being so careful to describe. I think it is just an illusion that stupid people use, that he can game whenever he needs to. He does not care about the law at all. It's just window dressing to him. I don't trust him one bit. I think you're right on that.
I trust him a lot, but it's only because I have a vast overestimation of my upper body strength, and I believe I can throw him across the planet.
You start seeing photos of him from a side view, Justin. He's a rotund fella.
I'm just gonna toss him like an old World's Strongest Man from like the 80s. Just tossing a big lump, like a big log, like Magnus for Magnuson. Yeah!
All I know is I want to be there when you try.
I'll just judo throw him down the ballroom of Mar-a-Lago.
I think I could probably throw Michael Dukakis. I feel like he was probably...
What president do you think you could throw the farthest?
Oh, Jimmy Carter.
Definitely now.
Jesus.
He can't fight you. He weighs 45 pounds. Yeah.
Yeah. That's easy.
By the way, did you see the old lieutenant governor of Texas said that he was on the trip through the Middle East where a Republican who was allegedly connected to the Reagan campaign was sent to tell other Middle Eastern governments to tell Iran to not release the hostages until after the election. This was in the New York Times.
I feel like I've known that for years.
It has been a popular story. This is, I think, the first time that I have heard somebody on the record say that they were a part of it. Now, we add a caveat. We have no idea whether or not Iran heard that, whether or not the reason why they released the hostages when they did was because of it.
The timing is suspicious.
I mean, you know, look, we all see the world through an American prism. It's one of our favorite things to do as an American.
Just to be safe.
To make it all about us.
Just to be safe, I think we should dig up Reagan's corpse and put it on trial. Like that one pope.
Yeah. Like that one pope.
I can't remember which pope. You've heard of this?
No.
This is great. I can't remember which pope it was, but he was a hell of a colorful fella. He ended up, I think, dying in flagrante delicto with his mistress, or alternately, his mistress's husband killed him. The books aren't really sure about it. He actually left being pope and then came back and was like, I changed my mind. I'm still pope. And the predecessor prior to him hated the previous pope. And so when that pope died and he became pope, he had the body dug up and put it on trial and had everybody yell at it and then condemn it. And then I think like hang from a noose as a heretic or something.
Ew. When was this?
85, 40.
I think it was, an early, late Middle Ages, early Renaissance pope, maybe 1300 or so, I think. I could be. I don't know. I'll look at my notes. I do a podcast called Losers, Pretenders, and Scoundrels every once in a while. I haven't done it in a long time, but it's all historical figures. And we did a really fun episode on bad popes. And it was great.
That's a good one.
Tell you what, the only Will Trump Get Arrested coverage that you're going to listen to today that includes the hanging of a dead pope. Patreon.com/We're Not Wrong is where you can immediately financially reward such brilliance. Head on over to patreon.com/We're Not Wrong right now and make sure that you get your bonus episode. And it's a goodie today, too. We're going to be talking about the 20th anniversary of the Iraq War. 20 years ago today, I was sitting in my dorm room in Syracuse University, baked out of my mind, watching March Madness when they broke in to show the Shock and Awe campaign in progress, being shown live. That was 20 years ago today, the Shock and Awe campaign.
That's wild. I was in Germany and they didn't have to break in. It was the only thing on the news.
Well, probably because they're too dumb to watch awesome college basketball over there.
I missed this. We invaded Iraq?
You're going to hear that on Patreon, patreon.com/We're Not Wrong. Although I will say CBS's decision to break into live basketball coverage was...
Take that, sports. Now you know how Star Trek feels.
That was their decision. There were, I'm sure, other channels that were showing it that didn't have basketball to break into. I just happened to be watching basketball when I saw it.
It's just fascinating to me, since I wasn't here, to have this 20-year anniversary and be hearing the American experience of it, because I didn't experience it with the rest of you. So it's like over dinner, Joe and I
It began when you were in Germany?
Yeah. Okay. I was in Germany from the beginning of January 2003 until the end of May 2003.
Save this for people to pay.
I was about to say, I have some great thoughts.
For people to pay.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not these freeloaders.
Exactly.
You got to pay like Trump allegedly did to Stormy.
That's right. Be our Stormy Daniels. Come on, Patreon.
Let's talk about zoning.
Yes.
Very excited about zoning, chat. You cannot see.
Can you guys feel the glee?
Oh, my God. One day, we're going to have to make this a YouTube show just so you can see the full tumescence of Andrew Heaton as soon as the zoning conversation. Apparently, his pants are zoned for new build. Short-term rentals like Airbnb and VRBO are on the rise, and with them have come many complaints from neighbors who have seen their neighborhoods become the home of permanent party palaces. According to Texas Monthly, among the most jarringly changed is East Austin, not but a short 10-minute ride from where we are recording this right now. The article describes a very aggressive culture of rental companies building dedicated 12-bedroom palaces dedicated to seducing hard partying 20-somethings or those who just want to emulate their debauchery. As for those that would police short-term rentals, city and states say that they have very little room to work. All while residents complain that the disintegration of their once quiet neighborhoods has also come along with higher property taxes. Let me give a shout out to this article, Inside the Brotastic Party Mansions, Upending a Historic Austin Community. It is well done in a world. Texas Monthly is one of the last bastions of great magazine journalism and journalism with a capital J. This is no exception. If you are deluded and used to reading a lot of web journalism that either doesn't report on anything or just summarizes other things from other places or maybe talks to one person, this is a great representation, including some truly hilarious quotes. The party
like
bros,
the pedo bus.
The party bros that built this gigantic house that is at the center of a lot of these stories issues a quote for the article that descends into rhyme, into holistic, new hippie rhyme. It's pretty ridiculous. Heaton, we'll start with you.
Okay.
And possibly end with you, depending on how long this goes. What can be done to assuage residents and yet protect the right to property?
Before I jump in, I want to go back and make sure I understand the frame for this. At the beginning of the program, Jen, you said that you thought I was going to think you're a bad guy. Out of curiosity, why?
That wasn't a personal thing.
Of course not.
The reason
personal.
That I even was sent this article to begin with is because I'm living a short-term rental life. So when you look at these cities that are like these people that are Airbnb-ing and it's taking over housing, like I'm one of the people who's using that housing. Gotcha. So
and I do that when I'm in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
So there are three main problems that are brought up in this article. Number one, the fact that there is less of a permanent community in some of these neighborhoods. So there are quotes of neighbors saying, you know, we used to have kids that would run around during the afternoon. Now it's all quiet. It just loses an element of the character of the neighborhood. Number two, these houses become more valuable, which, yes, raises the value of the houses that are also in the neighborhood, but also raises property taxes. And here in Texas, that is the main way that you pay into the government since there is no state income tax. There's also a little element of predatory home buyers. So one of the sources complained that it's every 2 days that somebody comes in and is very aggressive about wanting to buy her home and blah, 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 blah. The third and the most colorful is that some of these homes are not built for people like you or Jen, people that aren't going to get a year lease or maybe even a 6 month lease, but want some semi-permanent place that they can hang their hat. And by and large, you are quiet additions to the neighborhood, although not ones that will be, you know, bringing in kids or anything like that. The problem tenants are there for 3 days and they're 12 dudes or 12 women that are up there to get absolutely shit-faced and basically turn an otherwise once quiet block into a frat party where that there would not otherwise be. And some of these buildings are built specifically for that, like the one that is owned by the rhyming property
manager or whatever it was.
Urban Space is what it's called. Yeah. But they tore down a single family home, built a, I guess, 7-bedroom but sleeps 12 party palace, put in a hot tub and a bus with a stripper pole in the back so everybody could have the time of their life East Austin.
The implication of the article is that these are really bad and should be banned. And when cities attempt to ban them, the more evil state government comes in and stops them from doing so. That was the takeaway I got.
Yes. I think that that is the thrust of the article.
Yeah. I think that's a very, very bad way to approach this. So let's deal with the noise nuisance element first. That was a recurrent feature of this was the article's very clear on who the bad guys and good guys are. All of the good guys in this article are minorities that are older. Some of them were former social workers. All the bad guys are white frat bro, tech bro guys.
Who don't live here.
We know from the get-go who we're supposed to root for. The guys that are being assholes, that are being loud and drunk and obnoxious, that is something that the government should absolutely come in and deal with. But you do that by targeting behavior. You don't do it by trying to ban property types from different people. If there's a recurring issue at a property here in Austin, you have to have an annual permit to run an STR. You could revoke that as the city. But the main thing I would do as the city for these things is when you're dealing with negative behavior, go for the behavior. So if someone's throwing a really loud party and that's bothering the residents, they're completely in their right to have somebody come in and stop it. Give a big hefty fine to whoever owns this property and is making money off of it. If they keep doing it, penalize them to the point they're not going to do it anymore. If you stop a party and it starts going up again because everybody's drunk and really loud, arrest them. Like I'm very anti-noise, right? But deal with the behavior. What the article is insinuating is that the way to deal with this is just to ban STR, short-term rentals, and then that will solve the problem. And the problem that I have with this is twofold. First of all, this could have been written by the National Hotel Association. This is great for the National Hotel Association because it hates short-term rentals. It hates Airbnbs. It wants to do exactly this. It wants to have the government come in and limit competition for the various things that would be competing against it. It doesn't want Jen to go stay there. It wants to force Jen to go into a Marriott. And the downside to that, in addition to the fact that Jen can't go there, I can't go there when I'm in other cities, is that for the aforementioned lovely people in the article that are having a tough time paying rent and paying property taxes, they can't participate in any of this economy if we get really strict in terms of banning short-term rentals and we get strict in terms of zoning away any type of Airbnb activity. I want a person that has a spare bedroom in their house or ideally like a freestanding garage to be able to rent that out and make some money. That's great. I would love for average citizens to be able to get in on the economy rather than having it limited to big corporations like the Hilton and the Marriott. The other problem that I have with this is it keeps alluding to house prices and house prices going up and these developers are coming in and they're buying these houses and that's limiting the amount of housing available for other people. And that's partially true. Like the cost of housing is mostly a function of supply and demand. Too many people want houses in Austin. There's not enough supply. So the price goes up. That's absolutely true. I did the math on this. According to the article, there are, I believe it's 10,000 STRs in the city of Austin. Then I looked and found the amount of housing units in Austin, which is like 440,000, something like that, right? So it ends up being about 3%. We're talking about 3% of the housing units in Austin go to these STRs. So if you ban them, you can maximally get 3% of an increase in the housing supply. Meanwhile, I sent this to Justin. I didn't print it off, Jen, because he doesn't have a color printer, but I found a color map of the zoning in Austin. If you'd like, I can put it in the show notes or I can email it to you guys. If you look at a map of Austin in terms of the zoning, yellow is the stuff that is by law low density, and it's 75% of Austin. Austin is by law, by the government here, you can't build lots of places to have people in 75% of the real estate zone. So if you actually want to lower prices for people, you actually want to increase the supply, the way to do it is not to go after 3% of these people that we've labeled douchebags that we want to swat down. The way to do it is to pull these onerous zoning regulations away, allow people to use their own private property to build an apartment complex if they feel like doing it, or build a duplex or a triplex or whatever, let more families move in. That increases the housing supply and it decreases the price. That's what you do. So I'm looking at this and I think what the writer for this article has basically done is gone, I don't like this group of people. The government should fly swatter them. And I think that it is it's missing the much, much, much larger picture and it's not going to work and it's probably not going to achieve the goal. It might be able to achieve some of the noise stuff, but the way to deal with that is still to go directly for the noise stuff.
So about the noise stuff, because one of the things I found fascinating about this article is it was talking about how the local law enforcement officers, their hands are kind of tied. They can't find the owners over and over again. And that's part of the problem is they don't know how they can police this behavior. And when they do, the state is stepping in and saying, like, you can't do this. And so I think that is one of the problems, right? Like if you're in a community and all of a sudden you have these people that are coming in just on the weekends, what you don't have in the behavior is what you would get with a long-term resident of that person doesn't want to be hated. This person needs to live there. Like there's a social aspect to being a good neighbor that just kind of happens naturally when you are a neighbor. But when you do come into a town, you're only there for 3 days and you're getting shit faced. And I mean, it's, you know, there's a reason why we do have zoning where you have the tourists in hotel areas where it's loud and you know what it is, but it's like the person with the kid can put their kid to bed at 8 p.m. and not have this giant party next door by people who aren't their neighbors. And then if you punish them, there's a new crowd coming in 3 days later. So I do feel like if we're going to allow this, and I'm with you where it's like, if you buy a house, you should be able to do with it whatever you want. But we do have to allow the local law enforcement officers to do that policing, to have the power to be like, you're not from here. This isn't your house. We're kicking you out, or whoever owns this house, we're kicking you out. And if you don't kick them out, then you get fined $2,000 or whatever. But they have been handcuffed from doing that in East Austin. So that in that way, like, I don't think banning short-term rentals is the solution, but we have to let the locals police their own communities.
I agree with you there, but the way to do it is to target the noise, right? So like I lived in New York City for 5 years.
Well, hold on. I do think just before we get back to the noise complaint, one of the issues that is brought up in this article is that this, especially this one party palace that is highlighted, should be under a certain, I forget if it's like a license or whatever, that the city of Austin is no longer giving. They don't have it. And yet they are allowed to operate because the enforcement mechanism that knows that they don't have it and knows that they are violating and says in the article that they would love to be fining them daily $1,000, which would essentially wipe out the profit motivation for them to at least, you know, rent it at the price that they are renting it right now, is because they are not able to by way of whatever, you know, bureaucratic machinations.
See, that just tells me that this is a fairly toothless method to try and get compliance to begin with.
Indeed.
Like there are plenty of Airbnb. I've stayed at Airbnbs before where the person will be like, by the way, if anybody asks, you're my cousin.
That's a very regular thing.
I get that all the time.
Yeah. It happens all the time. It's very, very difficult to make this compliance issue stick in any city, New York City, Anaheim, Santa Monica, Austin, all these cities try to ban these by saying, we have made a law, you can't do this anymore. But laws aren't magical. They're not self-enforcing. There has to be an enforcement mechanism for them. It's very difficult to do it. And so my thought would be, rather than wasting resources trying to police something that isn't in and of itself bad, it would be better to bump up the resources available for the externalities that we're concerned with. So back to Jen's point, like, communities should absolutely be able to police for noise. I am 1,000%. I am the most authoritarian I am is about littering and noise. I think if people litter, they should be forced to eat it. And I think if you're making noise all the time, you should be thrown in the clink. And if you have a really loud car, I don't want you to die, but I do hope you have a wreck. Like, I'm very opposed to noise.
A very quiet wreck.
Yeah, a very quiet wreck.
A wreck into
ideally,
a pillow factory.
You just drive
right off the cliff and no one hears
it. It helps that I currently live across from a strip club. And turns out guys going in and out of strip clubs love revving their engine. And I want all of them to break their legs. When I lived in New York City, I was there for 5 years. I had some really nice neighbors and I had some real shitbag neighbors.
The noise complaint story with the roof?
I'm not even going to say the previous one that I've done, but
okay.
I lived for a year across from a struggling band that would begin a party every night, literally every night at 2 to 3 a.m.
Oh,
and,
Jesus.
Would continue till around 8 or 9 in the morning. But they lived there. I mean, they had a rental contract and things like that, right? I would rather have it be based on the action than the type of renter. Because if it's based on the type of renter with, you know, banning STRs, those guys were fine. The police could have come in and they're like, oh, well, I would be based on the noise, right? There was a guy in my last apartment, beautiful, out of this courtyard. One of the neighbors would piss off the roof into my courtyard on a regular basis. But he was like, he lived there, right? I'm very pro-neighbor and everything, but go for the action. And the way to do that would be to give the police force greater latitude in finding or arresting people. I don't know the full machinations, Justin, of how this works. It's my understanding.
I would suggest you read the article, not you, but the listener read the article because it does lay it out. The one thing I do really appreciate about the article is even if you don't agree with the framing of it, which I had similar kind of issues on, like, all right, we kind of know who our winners and losers here are. The reporting was such that it gave you all of the pieces for which you could form your own conclusions on it if you'd like. And that is a sign of them doing their job right and doing, you know, applying the craft of journalism.
When I look at, you know, this whole situation of what to do about it, there is one area that I think is doing a pretty good job of policing these short-term rentals because they're everywhere, and that's Wine Country up in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And the way they have done it, I mean, it's they have to put a rule on everyone, but the rule is that at 10 p.m., there is a no noise ordinance. If you can hear it outside your property, you get a giant fine, and it's not just the Airbnbs, it's everyone.
So if you've got a dick bad neighbor that decides he's going to do band practice at 11 at night, great. That's fantastic. I like that because it's applying real teeth to the externality we don't want.
Well, it is, but then the people that live there have to play by these rules, and that's a very not Texas thing to do where it's like, this is my property, I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want. So I don't know if that's gonna work here, but it works
after
Sonoma.
Nine, Brenda, turn down the Eagles.
Yeah, we had take yoga at sunrise.
Heaton, well, one last thing here. You've made a very compelling point.
Thank you.
That there should be enforced and maybe even harsher rules when it comes to noise. But the two other things that they are complaining about, and they wind up complaining about more, at least from the quotes from the neighbors, are that the sense of community is gone, mm-hmm. and that the housing tax is higher. So you for that, you just say, sit on it?
Well, if you want to, is your goal to jack up the price of housing, which seems to be what the entire regulatory regime we have for zoning is from the beginning, I would get rid of that. I don't think that the point of housing regulation should be to tell you what to do with your property to make my property worth more. Where like you want to have a family come live in your freestanding garage, and I'm like that'll lower my property. I don't think that should be happening. Right. The way to address that is less zoning, not more zoning. We're really overzoned. I'll hold back on my rant. We're very, very overzoned compared to, say, Europe, which is beautiful, and you get all these wonderful walkable neighborhoods for that reason. We designed our cities to be for cars. We balkanized them so that there's the real estate on one side and the commercial on one side, and then we further really put in density laws, and those density laws are what makes the pricing go up. So if you're worried about people getting priced out, what you need to do is expand supply, and the good news is you don't have to do anything. All you have to do is let developers and private property build whatever they want, and they'll start doing that. In terms of people getting pushed out because of gentrification, the issue is not that property is becoming more expensive. It's that property taxes are becoming more expensive as a result, right?
Yes.
We'll get rid of the zoning laws, and that'll already drop. But if we're really worried about that, I would say let's figure out a different way to tax people. Like, I'm a Georgist, I don't have time to get into this, but like I would do like mineral rights or something, right? Where like maybe in Austin, where we have such a big tech industry, having an income tax would make more sense than property tax, and that way you're done on that. But in terms of like the character of the neighborhood, that's a real thing. And like I love having neighbors. Like I have like a dog co-op going with my next door neighbor Autumn. Like my neighbor Marty,
his dog co-op.
Yeah. So every day Wallace loves being outside. So I go to my camper and I work in my camper with the door open. And in Wallace's mind, we're both outside. If I'm in my office and he's outside, that doesn't count. But if I'm in a camper and he's outside, we're both outside, that's fine. But I'll go over to Autumn's place, open her door, let her dog Boomer out.
Yeah.
And then I know all the neighbors in the area. I love it. I really, really like that. I think neighborliness is really, really important, right? So I share their concern for that. I'm very reluctant to believe you're going to be able to use ham-fisted zoning regulations as a method by which to maintain cohesive neighborly elements. And in fact, I think that the track record's quite the opposite for government, which is that we're using zoning regulations historically for most of American history to oppress minorities and drive up prices. And that's not going to make for a good neighborhood either. So my solution would be less zoning rather than more zoning.
And I just think communities are going to change, and it is what it is.
Yeah.
I think we're also among the least personally invested in the like character of a neighborhood because I amongst the average have moved a lot and I am essentially a born and raised and will die in the same city person compared to the two of you guys who have moved even more than I have. So
but
we are all transients in our own way.
I'm thrilled I've been here long enough to grow plants. That's a new development for me.
I think that we're just the start of this lifestyle, though. like ever since COVID, like I'm one of the first full-time digital nomads. I think I'm far from the last, and the next generation, they're gonna like live in the way I do. I think I'm one of the first. There's gonna be more, and that's just gonna change the housing supply. It's gonna change how people work. It's gonna change a lot, and that's just what happens. And so while I feel bad for the person's like, I've been here for 60 years and this is my community, it's like, well, you've been here for 60 years. It's going to change over the course of 60 years. Like, sorry. I hope you're voting, you know, like I hope that you're invested in this community in a way that like you have a say in what happens, but I don't really have a lot of sympathy. I mean, I do have sympathy, but I don't think that it's something that we should be trying to legislate. Like, changes happens.
I agree completely. I went to Buddhist Sangha yesterday. I go to Sangha sometimes. And
what the hell's that?
It's like Buddhist Sangha is like church or synagogue. So I went to the Kadampa Center down in.
I'm not familiar with that term of art. No.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, like Buddhism, like a big portion of it is that like things change, and you can't help that. Things are going to keep changing. And if you try to like grip them and force them to stay the same, you just make it worse for yourself. And you have to kind of embrace that fluidity. I think Jen's right about that. And most of the attempts that we have to try to stop that fluidity from happening backfires. Like we want to have a government apparatus which protects people, but has a really big amount of dynamicism in the middle. When you start shutting off that dynamicism, it has long-term effects to it that are unintended. So like in New York, where rent control is very, very popular for obvious reasons, you end up having, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it's like half of the rent control departments in New York are rented by one person in a three-bedroom flat.
Yeah.
So like a three-bedroom apartment, the three-bedroom apartment can put a lot of people in there. But because we've said you never have to pay more than you did when you first moved in, we're also saying don't ever prioritize that housing. So if you didn't have those rent controls in place, that person, when their kid moved out, would go, we don't really need a three-bedroom flat anymore. It's very expensive to live here. We should live somewhere else. And they'd allow a new family to come into that three-bedroom flat. As it is, you have all this space that is filled with nostalgia, but not filled with people, which again leads to higher demand and higher prices for everybody and makes New York more expensive and hurts the poor people the worst. So embracing the change, I think, is a great idea, Jen.
I'll also say that I stayed in one of these like 12 bedroom party places in Orlando for a bachelor party like a couple months ago, and it ruled.
They're great. And that's the other thing too. When I heard about
it, fucking slapped. It was awesome.
When I heard about the place with the bus in the back with the stripper pole, I'm like, I want to rent it.
I know. It's hard. It's hard. We're not wrong pod at gmail.com. We're not wrong pod at gmail.com. Get all of your comments read on this show if they're short and good. Oink writes, Pigovian taxes, named after Pigou, the French economist. They're intended to internalize externalities in the sense that if your activity creates $10 in damage, say pollution, will tax you $10, so you start taking that damage into account. That was the...
Thank you. Thank you to that listener and to the nine people that emailed me very quickly after that happened. Well put. It's different. You talked about syntaxes last week, Justin. It's different than a syntax, because the syntax is basically punishing somebody for something that we believe is immoral, and we're trying to incentivize them to do something that's not immoral anymore. Whereas a Pigovian tax, you're trying to incentivize people to reduce the action they're doing that creates a negative externality.
Did anyone email you to tell you what Pygmalion is?
No.
That was a book, right?
I thought. Yeah, you're like going towards Pygmalion, and I was like, I know I've heard of that.
I think that's another thing, not just the name of the guy in the book.
It's the book that My Fair Lady's based off of, which is a wonderful musical. Love My Fair Lady.
Oh, so you did know what Pygmalion is.
Yeah, well, Pygmalion's the statue in ancient Greek mythos.
Oh, there we go.
The sculptor makes a beautiful statue of a woman, and he falls in love with it, and the gods make it come to life because he's so enamored with it. So it's the story of an inanimate object humanizing and becoming human.
That's the theme of the movie Mannequin from the 1980s.
That sounds like Pygmalion, except in a mall. Was it in a mall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were pretty hot in the 80s.
That's Pygmalion.
Yeah, she was blonde. That's all I remember.
Arrested Development was good, writes. Names for the audience. What about Never Wrongs, like Never Nudes, or Near Do Wrongs?
Near Do Wrongs? Those are better.
What did we have last week? It was like Know Nothings?
Know Nothings is my favorite.
I think I like Know Nothings.
For the record, you guys can choose this yourself. You don't have to suggest. There's no like
near do wrongs.
We're never gonna like wait, bang a gong and on. Now that's the name of the thing. Just start writing in. I'm a blank, and if there's enough of them, it'll just become the thing.
We could do a Patreon poll. We could let them name it and put up all the names.
No, because then we have to do a thing, and like nobody's. There's been no consensus at all.
Yeah. It's so, their name. Just use
yeah,
it.
Just good use point. It.
You're right.
It's in the way that you use it. Credit where credit is due writes, credit unions are more credit worthy than banks. They are more regulated and pay dividends to the members, not the directors.
Hmm. I like credit unions. The only problem with them is that they have criteria to join, where if you had Federal Reserve bank accounts or something that's truly public, everyone can get one, and it solves the unbanked issue.
Bag Facts writes, you have to reuse a thicker plastic bag a minimum of 14 times to equal the energy of one traditional single-use bag. A cotton bag needs to be reused 7,100 times before it equals a traditional bag. Since even good people like Jen won't get 14 uses out of the thicker plastic bags, let alone 7,100 uses from a cotton one before it wears out, the best bag for the environment is indeed the thinner traditional disposable bag.
Please tell me there were links to go along with any of those numbers.
I mean, I don't know. We do a podcast with words, not links.
Well, I don't trust those numbers at all. No.
We did get two emails on this. One of them also cited the cotton plastic bag thing. I do not know about.
I've seen similar stuff in the past. Like I could be wrong, but this passes the sniff test to me.
So. I have a bag. Let's see. I lived in Boston. I moved out of Boston in 2013. It is my Market Basket bag. It is the best goddamn reusable bag. In fact, someone took my red one. Someone took the blue one, and then it came back to me, and now someone has the red one. I will fucking find it. I have used these two bags for 10 years. They hold so much. Like, I'm obsessed with these reusable bags. So if you get a good reusable bag, it can last forever. You can just throw it in the washer. Like, I love those. And then these HEB bags that we're talking about with the thicker plastic, like, mm-hmm. I'm betting I do get like
more than 14 uses per bag.
Probably, because like I got my first batch of them and they fold down nice and flat. I throw them in the trunk of my car. So when I get to HEB, I just pull them, put them in the shopping cart, and like I'm using them over and over again. And I go shopping once a week. So if I'm here for 14 weeks, which I am.
I think it would be better if HEB went back to the thinner bags, still charged me the 30 cents and planted a tree. I think there'd be other things you could do that would be more productive than the thick bags.
I just find the idea that using these flimsy things that go directly into the trash and can't be reused is better for the environment than things that can and like are being reused, at least by some people. Like you might throw them right away. And when I do throw them away, it's because they've been acting as my actual trash bag. So I'm not buying trash bags because I'm using those. Like if you're actually using them, if you treat them as a product that you pay for, they actually get used.
I do reuse those flimsy plastic bags. I hand them to children as free space helmets.
To go back to the syntax thing though, like I think a lot of the time when we get into recycling issues and things like this, it does become kind of a quasi-religious thing. It varies from town to town how effective the recycling program is. Some of them are effective, some of them aren't effective, but they're very popular. And part of that is that it feels good. Like I am doing a good thing. As an environmentalist, I'm just concerned with the impact of it. I'm concerned with the pragmatic thing. I don't feel that it's sinful to throw away a bag or to, as long as it's disposed of properly.
Well, and I don't either. And even in this email, this person's like, good people like Jen, like I didn't claim to be better than anyone. I just don't mind the fee. And I think
this was a compliment to you.
No. And I'm not taking offense to it.
In reading the full context of the email.
I'm not taking offense to it. The point is that like, you're not wrong that there is this like good versus evil part of the conversation. That's just, it's for some of us, it's not the case. I'm not doing it to be self-righteous. I'm doing it because I have two great Market Basket bags and these HEB, like I just, I paid for them.
Jen,
so I want to get a use out of them.
Unrepentant bag lady.
I'm cheap, not better than that.
I am not referring to you then. This is not a Jen statement. There are people for whom recycling is holy, regardless of whether it's effective or not. And so I would rather us approach those things pragmatically rather than just recycling is innately good or whatever the thing is. I want to look, you know, what are the trade-offs? What's the effect? What's the cost? All that kind of stuff.
What is is that?
That's the air conditioning. But it's more awkward if we talk about it as opposed to just rolling through it.
Well, I just
from the land of
the
ice and snow writes, I'm writing to support what y'all were saying on the Nordic socialism thing. As a person living in one of these countries, Denmark, I'm sick and tired of people saying our system is socialist.
Sorry.
A clear example of this is the many government-owned infrastructure businesses that have been privatized over the last couple decades. And most of these privatizations have been initiated by the Social Democrats, our left-leaning governmental party, when they've been in power. The Nordic countries were never socialist, and we've been steadily moving further away from socialism since the 80s.
Yes, thank you very much for writing in. Yes, this confirms what I've been saying. Appreciate hearing from you. Thank you, our friend in Denmark.
We have character notes for Heaton. Heaton, you debuted a character of a brusque Democratic machine party politician last episode. The notes that came in were that the name should be J.B. Trundleberry Esquire, a.k.a. Jedediah Beauregard Trundleberry. And he's got a catchphrase, if you wouldn't mind reading down there and just giving us a read as J.B. Trundleberry Esquire.
Put that in your julep.
I think we're getting there. We're getting there. We're circling. Do Eastman writes, I just want to say that if you don't think everyone's been focusing on the Q Shaman and ignoring John Eastman, Rudy, Sidney Powell at all, you have not been watching MSNBC or listening to NPR or reading major newspaper. I'm from Southern California, so it's the LA Times. Q Shaman is barely mentioned in these news sources because he's a stooge. Eastman and the rest of the Stop the Steal crowd get a lot more coverage.
Guilty as charged. I am not watching MSNBC, and I do listen to NPR occasionally, but not that often, and I'm not reading most major newspapers, so entirely possible my interpretation of this event is skewed based on how little media I actually consume.
I just did a whole episode about January 6th, and my inbox is full of people saying I did not know anything about that part of the story. I only knew about the riots. So
email
that's where
all
I'm
of them
from.
Back and say, do you watch MSNBC, NPR, or read the LA Times?
They might not.
There
like,
we go.
I don't, so I do read the LA Times, but yeah.
Correctivist writes, Jen gets way too much shit for trying to give a damn about having the facts straight and being an idealist. People need to cut her some goddamn slack.
That means you too.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No, I antagonize Jen
just
for
kidding.
Money.
You guys like, are the best.
We all make money when we antagonize Jen. This is the point of the show.
I know.
A vile snitch writes, I'm writing to call out a grievous oversight in the 46th episode of the podcast. At the timestamp, approximately 1 hour, 22 minutes, and 19 seconds, Justin Robert Young not only reads an email about Teslas that they auto-change to daylight savings time, he didn't call out that it should be daylight saving time. After a whole podcast the previous week of throwing shit at his two hapless co-hosts about whether or not there should be an S at the end of saving. Isn't that fucked up? They called you two hapless?
How dare
That's
you?
That's fucked up.
English is a bullshit language. It doesn't really have rules. Everybody that writes in with things about how it has to be properly said, blah, 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 blah. It's all consensus.
Fedsplaining
well,
writes.
Well, and also, at this point, I'm saying daylight savings just to make those people crazy. Because it doesn't fucking matter.
I'm saying saving, and I fucked up once, and this person decided to take time out of their day to write in. But you want to know what? I don't get as much shit on this show during the emails as you guys do, so I figured I'd include it.
But doesn't it feel like you're like running into a verbal wall when you say daylight saving time? Like, there's just that that savings
no,
just takes
like, kind of
you
like a
into
slope
the time.
To it. There's kind of like an off-ramp.
Yeah, no, it just kind of eases you into the next
one. You know what?
Word.
I'm going to keep saying ATM machine. I'm going to fucking keep saying ATM machine.
That's a cool one.
I know it's
one.
Automatic transaction machine. I don't fucking care. I call it an ATM machine. I'm going to keep doing it. There's lots of weird shit in English that doesn't make sense.
Oh, the M is machine. I've never known what ATM stands for.
Oh, really?
I thought it was automatic teller.
I thought it was ass to mouth.
It might be that. I know the M's machine, though.
Fedsplaining writes, why didn't the Fed just increase the reserve requirement cash commercial banks must hold on hand, currently 10%, to reduce the velocity of money? That seems like a less damaging move to the economy than increasing interest rates and easier to unwind. It would also inherently force banks to protect themselves at the same time. Am I dumb or should I be on TV? That was the end of this email, so I will ask you, I don't need a take on the Fed raising cash requirements,
good.
But I do want to ask you guys, should this emailer be categorized as a dumb person, a real dummy, or should they be on television?
You can totally be on TV. So first of all, I have no idea. Like, that sounds very smart to me. I'm in favor of whatever you just said. I know a lot about zoning. I don't feel that comfortable talking about the Fed. It's very complicated, and I've not researched a lot of that. In terms of you being on television, two quick things for you. One of my friends who's currently a contributor in cable television news, when he first started coming on the show, we would only bring him on to do economics. We were trying to get him to do other stuff. And he was like, but I'm not qualified to talk about anything else. I mean, I only know economics. Like, I'm not an expert. And I was like, oh, you think we're putting qualified
smart
experts
people on television?
No. We're shoving a 23-year-old into a cocktail dress and finding a has-been baseball player with revved-up testosterone. It's not like people on TV know what's going on more than you do. They're just better at saying it. And then one of the big breakthroughs I've had in my career was about a year ago, because I didn't do this kind of thing. Justin, you remember I wasn't like really a pundit.
No.
And then I had a breakthrough moment where I was like, wait a minute. Are all those fuckers just more confident than me, but they don't actually know what, like, they don't know more?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the case. So step up. Become a TV pundit, friend.
Dumb or TV?
I think probably on TV. I have an actual answer to his question, though, about the Fed.
Oh, go for it. Oh, yeah.
So he's asking why the Fed didn't increase the reserve requirement is like how much actual money the banks have to hold on to. And the reason is the banks have been lobbying so fucking hard to not have to do that. And the Federal Reserve, it's one of the biggest problems we have with it is it's a terrible regulator of the big banks where all the people that are at the top of it came from. So they don't want to do anything that the banks
wouldn't like. So you do think it's a good idea?
Oh, yeah, it's a fine idea, okay. But the banks refuse to allow it to happen.
The banks lobby against it. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Fed is a terrible it's basically regulating, it's bankers regulating themselves. So that's why it's not happening.
Emailer, go to the mirror, look at your head. If you go, Jesus, that's a gigantic head on my neck, you should be on television.
Roger Ailes watched TV with the music or with the volume off. He didn't even know what you were saying. He just needed to know what you looked like and how emotive you were.
No, the camera takes off 5 pounds. It's just all in your head. So if you have a gigantic head, then it looks normal on television. Otherwise, everybody else, it looks like we have like very small little pinheads. Mm-hmm. It's off-putting.
That's why I'm podcasting.
Obviously, writes, this should be self-evident, but the chief purveyors of label-based bickering are conservatives. Everything and anything can and will be called woke, and anything the government does is bad and will be called socialism. It's quite simple-minded, but it's the root of why everyone gets confused about labels.
Okay, and then there's the progressives. They're everything they don't like is fascist, and like the labels is a problem on both sides.
Nope.
Stop it.
Nope, it's self-evident that the purveyors of label-based bickering are conservative. Case closed.
Yeah, okay. Case closed then. Thanks, gang. Thanks, gang.
I'm actually pissed at myself that I didn't. I read the other sentence because I just like there's like a perfect like Mark Twain like little joke in just the it's self-evident, but the purveyors of label-based bickering are conservative. It's just a very inherently funny phrase, just in and of itself. Went Postal writes, one of the national governments that had banking service directly for the citizens. The United States of America, 1910 to 1967. It was the United States Postal Savings System. I guess We're Not Wrong doesn't include heat and since the Postal Savings System weathered world wars, global depression, and inflation.
I stand corrected. The private sector is evil. The government is entirely staffed by competent people who are pure of heart. I have been wrong about all prior things I've said. Thank you for correcting me.
Sounds like a chief purveyor of label-based bickering to me. A German writes, on the subject of post office banking, I can't speak for other countries, but I know that Germany has privatized both its postal system, DHL, and its post office bank, Postbank. The latter has since merged with Deutsche Bank and is operated as a wholly owned subsidiary. I suspect Jen and Eaton will have different takes on Germany's privatization efforts.
Probably.
Yeah.
It's not just Germany. There's been a whole wave of liberalization throughout Europe. So Britain, which is no longer Europe, did this several years ago. I believe so did Sweden, part like maybe France, Belgium. There's quite a few. There's like maybe 5 to 10 different countries that have liberalized their postal system or elements of their postal system over the last 10, 15 years. And yeah, I think it was a step in the right direction. I think like a European liberal.
Yeah, the same disease that has infected us where everything that can be done for a profit should be done for a profit is definitely being infected all over Europe. So yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that things are being privatized, but I don't know that for sure. When I lived there in Germany, It wasn't privatized, and people seemed pretty happy about it, so I'm surprised that they did this.
I was high when I wrote this, listening to your podcast, right? I'm not going to lie. I will only listen to your podcast when I'm smoking weed. Not because that's like the only way I can listen to it, but I genuinely enjoy the conversation when I'm smoking alone. I honestly get that 70s show vibes. Ha ha. Your podcast is now with the high tiers of home podcasts as the fifth column, which I do the same thing. Much love to you all.
Thank you, Smoker.
I'll bet you he's freaking the fuck out right now.
I'm just excited to hear that Cheech Marin listens to our show.
Yeah. Dave's not here, or apparently a chief purveyor of label-based bickering. In defense of Silicon Valley Bank, SVB suffered a bank run like we have not seen in decades and possibly larger than anyone alive has seen. Between 20 to 25% of their deposits were withdrawn within 24 hours. It would probably kill every bank in America if it happened to them. I don't think that the reserve requirements have ever been high enough to survive something like that.
I don't know what the history of the reserve requirements are. I know that ours are actually much higher than Germany's and Britain and Canada. I think we've got 10% for our reserve requirements. Germany's at 2%. Britain and Canada, it's sort of ad hoc. They don't have an official statistic that I could find. I don't know that it's ever been 20 or 25%. Wouldn't surprise me if it was prior to the Depression, though. Like we had really, really onerous banking regulations during the Depression. I realize this is counterintuitive to a lot of things, but like, Canada didn't have any major banks go down because they were allowed to bank across provincial lines, whereas the United States had laws in place that stopped banks from going across state lines. So if the corn market failed, every bank in Iowa failed, and so on and so forth. So it wouldn't surprise me if there was, but yeah, that would be pretty high, and I'm unaware of any period where it has been that high.
Women's Month writes, in honor of Women's History Month, Justin and Andrew should cede their microphones for one show to two female guest hosts, maybe Katie Herzog and Mary Catherine Hamm, so that Jen can have an all-female co-hosting team. I, too, would like to celebrate Women's History Month by conscripting two talented, busy women to do my job for me.
You guys get a day off and I get to be...
I think it's about time. Yes, she can. Yes, she can.
I have nothing against Katie Herzog. I follow her on Twitter, and I know nothing about Mary Hamm.
Catherine Hamm, yeah.
She's a nice lady. I've hung out with her a couple of times. She's a very nice lady.
Yeah.
Does she want to do my job for me?
I doubt it.
But
if she'll come, yes, absolutely.
Sure, yeah.
As much as you guys want a day off, I actually enjoy
podcasting with you both. No, as much as we support women. As much as we support women. Please. Get it right. Jesus.
How many times must we yell over Jen and Steph on her to drive this lesson home?
It's like fucking open her ears. Jesus.
You know, I was going to say I enjoy podcasting with you both, but you know what? Katie, Catherine, let's do it. Fuck these two. Or at least Justin. Andrew's at least trying to be nice to me right now.
We're Not Wrong is a production of Dog and Pony Show Audio. Our editor is Will Saddleberg. Do you guys have any updates on the show? We just recorded the show like 4 days ago. Is there anything new popping on the orphanage?
What am I doing this week? This week I am talking to Steve Krakauer, who is the author of Fifth Watch. Just had a book come out on journalism. I'm talking to him about journalism, Justin.
Yep.
One of your favorite topics. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'm keen to talk to him about is journalism more biased geographically than it is in terms of ideology? I think probably it's more to do with geography than it is to do with left versus right. And I will be talking to him about that on the Political Orphanage.
I will say that he is by far the most conservative journalist that I worked with at the Daily Orange, Krakauer.
He's been everywhere, though. He was at CNN for a while, and now he's on Megyn Kelly.
No, I know. Yeah, I'm just pointing out that I came from a prestigious stock of journalists, including Pulitzer Prize winners. Mm-hmm. But every one of them would, by and large, be liberal.
My university gave a doctorate to Custer's horse.
Jen, any dish updates?
So I've been watching so many hearings, and I haven't decided which one I'm doing. I'm working on two episodes simultaneously. One's going to be about the safety of our skies. I got the full story on the goddamn balloon. I watched the UFO hearing, and I found out what's going on with the FAA. And then, I watched a six-hour hearing today about the Hunter Biden laptop. But I am doing an episode on the whole Twitter thing because I think it's fascinating and important.
And a shit show of a hearing. Oh,
shit
my God.
Show of
like,
a hearing.
Like, tech hearings in general are kind of a tire fire because nobody knows what the fuck is going on. And it's just a lot of doddering old people being doddering and old and asking a bunch of people, many of whom are not exactly charismatic, to explain why their email isn't working.
Yeah.
But this, even on the scale of like dog shit tech hearings, this was something special.
Well, like, I'm learning stuff in between Lauren Boebert screaming so loud I had to turn down the volume. There was a lot of nonsense, but at the same time, the role of government with Twitter, I'm learning a lot of details that I haven't gotten through osmosis, even though I listened to a lot of, you know, I listen to Rising and Breaking Points, and I do read, like, this stuff hasn't gotten to me without the hearing. So I'm learning things, but oh my God, this committee that I used to love has Marjorie Taylor Greene and Boebert and Comer and just an AOC saying crazy shit. And it's just like all the extreme people are on this
and
one
Debbie
committee.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz and like it is.
No, no, no. I'm not that hearing.
Oh,
that's
not
the
that
one
hearing.
I have
oh,
to
a
watch.
Different hearing. Oh, okay.
That's
oh, no. That
by
was
tomorrow.
The one, that was the one that I'm like, oh, so if there's another one that's a shit show, the one I'm talking about is the one with Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Oh,
on
no.
It.
I'm the one I watched. This was House Oversight, and this was back in February. Tomorrow, I'm going to be watching the one with Matt Taibbi and Michael
yes.
Schellenberger. Yeah, that shit show's tomorrow. And then Taibbi was also on Rogan, which is what got me on the rabbit hole. Because when you hear him, when he's not being yelled at by Debbie Wasserman Schultz,
yeah.
explain his concerns, it's like, okay, I see that. So I'm going to be looking at all these hearings for the stuff that Matt is concerned about and kind of putting together that story.
Yeah, it was an absolute tire fire. Like, at least the clips that I saw. I did not yeah. watch all of it, but it was... You know,
but all the clips I saw were of Democrats behaving badly. I didn't see a single second of Matt Taibbi's 5-minute opening statement or Michael Schellenberger's. Like, I do want to get the actual testimony as opposed to the drama because I've seen yeah. the drama everywhere.
Yeah.
I want to know what they actually
said. This sounds amazing. Sorry, what are they talking about?
The Twitter files.
Oh, OK.
Yeah. So they've been entertaining hearings, but.
It sounds great, but I don't have the time to sit down and watch all of them, but I wish that there was some smart way it could be distilled for me in an entertaining and intellectually rigorous manner.
Yep.
I can do that for you.
You can listen to the Politics show where I'll be illegally rebroadcasting Jen's work and calling it my own.
Hello,
I've come up with a new AI voice character, guys. You're going to love it.
Jim Briney, and you're listening to the Congressional Bowl.
PX3, if you want more Trump stuff, we're going to wait as late as we can and find out whether old Chungus gets arrested. And if he does, it will be joined by a bunch of context to other federal election stuff and whether or not it makes sense and whether or not it can be called something that is politically motivated. So we'll find out. You know my prior, so I've yet to do all the research on it. We'll see.
If he does get arrested, would you please text me?
I will.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I will.
I would like to know if he gets arrested if his fingerprints are smaller than the average
person's
prints.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Prints. Just little raccoon prints.
Yeah, just like teeny tiny.
He just has just little dots.
Little dainty children.
It's like, is that Braille? Oh, no, it's
you know, if they really wanted to fuck with him, the way to do it would be to be really, really nice. But make him sit in that room, just like in the waiting room, for like 3 hours and just be like, any minute now, our regular print guy's gone. Any minute now. And just make him sit there like at the DMV.
They should make him fuck Stormy Daniels in front of all of America. That's your punishment. Do it. We all have to watch. Anyway, for Jen Briney and Andrew Eden, I'm Justin Robert Young. We're not wrong.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.